We're doing Makos. We're up to Daf Beis Amid Beis. Gemara had asked, how do we know that Edom Zomimim can get lashes? The Gemara had derived it from the verses regarding lashes, V'ayayim Binakot HaRasha. Now the Gemara asks, B'teipuk Lei. Teipuk means to take out, right? Puk, go out. V'teipuk Lei, why don't we derive it? Why don't we take it out, meaning derive it? Milo Tane. From the prohibition in the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not give false testimony. These witnesses, these Edom Zomim, gave false testimony. So maybe when we cannot fulfill Kasher Zomim, when we cannot give them what they plotted, what they intended to administer, then maybe we should give them the standard lashes, because there is a prohibition, lo taneh, do not give false testimony. Answers the Gemara, I couldn't derive it from that verse, mishum dehave lav she'en bo maaseh. V'chol lav she'en bo maaseh, en lokin alav. So we've seen throughout this page that the Gemara treats speech as not a maaseh. Remember, we discussed this. So we have a rule, lav she'en bo maaseh. Whenever the transgression of a prohibition does not involve a physical action, what's called a maise, then you cannot give lashes. Later on, 11 pages into the Masechet, the Gemara will derive it, because the verses that describe lashes are juxtaposed with the verse about not muzzling your animal as it threshes. Lo tachsom shor bedisho. And the Gemara is going to tell us that that juxtaposition teaches us the prototypical case that would receive lashes. And so we analyze that case of lo tachsom shor bedisho, and one of the points we derive is that lo tachsom shor bedisho, the Torah is prohibiting an action. The transgression of that prohibition involves an action. You have to actually muzzle the animal as it's threshing. So that's going to be our derivation later on. But for now, the Gemara takes it as a given. Lav shein bo maise, ein lokin alav. Any prohibition that does not involve an action, the transgression of the prohibition does not involve a maase, and we said speech is not called a maase. That's why we couldn't derive it from lotane. So that's what the Gemara answers. And with that, we've basically closed that sugiya. Tanu Rabbanan. We're quoting a braisa. The reason the braisa begins with Tanu Rabbanan is to stress that this was accepted by the rabbinic institution of Rabbi Chiya or Rav Hoshaya. This is a braisa that carries more weight than other braitot. Tanu Rabbanan. Daled dvarim ne'emru be'edim zomimim. Four things were said with regards to edim zomimim. If we were learning more in depth, we would have to analyze, what does ne'emru mean? What is this whole introduction here for? I'll count, I'll figure it out. Ein na'asin ben grusha uben chalutza. Number one, they themselves, even if they became edom zomim, just like our Mishnah taught, they do not become ben grusha uben chalutza. They do not become a chalal. Ein golin la'arim miklat. They don't get exiled, even though they were caught edom zomim on that. Ein mishalamin et ha'kofer. If they testified about an ox that has already killed three times, that it killed a fourth time, and then the Torah says that the master of that ox, the owner of that ox, has to pay a tax that's called kofar. So to speak, he has to redeem his soul from what the ox did. That's why it's called kofar. So if they testified that Joe's ox killed a fourth time, even though they were trying to obligate him kofar, they themselves do not pay kofar. The ein mimkarin be'eved ivri. If they testify that someone stole, and we have a halacha that if someone stole and they cannot pay off what they stole, then they can be sold as an eved ivri to cover that responsibility. Nonetheless, the witnesses, the Edim Zomimin, would not be sold as an Eved Ivri. Even though they went and testified about a guy whose yearly wages was 30,000 shekel, that he stole $2 million. And it's pretty obvious that that's what would have happened if their testimony would have gone through. Nonetheless, they, when they have to pay those $2 million and they can't come up with it, do not get sold as an Eved Ivri.
Why does our Mishnah only mention three of the cases which are mentioned in this Braita?
That's an excellent question. Can you answer it?
Brevity's sake? Doesn't seem like a good answer.
Let's analyze the cases of our Mishnah. You're right that the cases in our Mishnah, we do not do kasher zamin. But there's another detail in the cases in our Mishnah. What do we do instead?
Okay.
We give them lashes. Now, the question is here, are we going to give lashes in these four cases? According to the derivation we said earlier, it would seem that we should. Let's wait and see. Okay? Let's wait and see. That's a very good question. Mishum Rabbi Akiva Amru, and that should also bother us. Why is the Braisa using a different term about Rabbi Akiva? It doesn't just say Rabbi Akiva Omer. In the name of Rabbi Akiva, they said, who's the Amru? Af, which might connote on a lower level, secondary, even. Ein mishalmim al piatzman. They do not pay when they hand themselves in. So that needs to be understood. What's going on here? So we have a rule, mode biknas patur. If someone admits that he must pay a tax, then that absolves him of that tax. So let's say a person stole an item. If he would be caught, he'd have to pay the principal value of the item or give the item back, and he'd be taxed with paying double. If he walks into court and says, I stole this item, I want to return it, he returns the item, he doesn't pay the tax. Okay? Mode biknas patur. One who admits to a tax gets absolved from it, generally. Knas, maybe tax isn't the right word, a fine. Knas is a fine, a penalty. Now, these witnesses, the simple reading of the Gemara is, if they walk into court and say, well, at the time that we testified about so-and-so, we weren't really there. So they just made themselves into Edim Zomimin, right? So then maybe that should absolve them from the fine. No, because if they do that, we won't believe them. We have a rule, kivan shehigid, once a person gave testimony, shuv eino chozer umagid. They can't renege on their own testimony. Once they gave it, they can't take it back. So what, yes? So we're talking about a different scenario. They came to court, and they were found to be Edim Zomimin. Now, the court received the second set of witnesses who say they were with us at the time they claim they saw it. And before they could be sued to pay that fine of Kasher Zaman. They ran to a second court and they said, we are witnesses who were found to be Edim Zomimim. So that they could do. Meaning, they cannot renege on their own testimony, but they can go to a second court and say, we owe this money, we're Edim Zomimim. And once they did that, technically they've admitted to a fine, and being that the court has not yet obligated that fine, then they can be absolved from it. Meaning, why doesn't every thief do this? When he gets caught, let him go to court and say, I admit I stole. No. Once the courts are obligating him, he can no longer admit. That's why he has to go to a different court, because this court's already dealing with this case.
So he's also being tried in a different court?
No, they open the case in another court. They're being tried in this court because here's where they gave testimony, and this is where the second set of witnesses walked in. So technically, this is where they're going to have to pay the money. But the court over here didn't reach a conclusion yet. And they walk out of court, and they go to a second court, and they say, we want to open a new case before you. We are witnesses who were caught to be Edim Zomim, and we owe this money. Once they admit to it, then being that the first court did not yet obligate the fine, so then they found a halachic loophole, a legal loophole, to get out of it.
How were they caught to be Edim Zomim yet at the first court?
Second set of witnesses walked in and said, you were with us at the time.
But they didn't obligate. I thought the court didn't obligate them.
Didn't obligate them. They walked into court and said, Chaim owes $1 million. The court comes to a ruling and tells Chaim, you got to pay $1 million. Before Chaim could pay, a second set of witnesses walk in and say, the time you claim you saw him borrow $1 million, you were with us. Now they become Edim Zomim. They have to pay. The next step is Chaim has to sue them back and say, okay, now pay me those $1 million. Now, before he could do that, they say, could we just go use the restroom? They go to the restroom, climb out the window, and run to a second court and say, we have a confession to make. We were at a court, we were found to be false witnesses, we were found to be Edim Zomimim, and we must pay this tax. So the court verifies their information and finds out that the first court did not really open the case. He didn't, Chaim didn't sue them yet. If he didn't sue them, they can't go before the first court because that court's already in process. He can't admit before them. But they could go to a second court.
their admission in the second court will help them in the case with the first court.
But isn't it like you said, then every criminal would have this out? Right?
No, because once he sues them, they can no longer admit.
Right, but do they have this opportunity before
he should sue them before they get out? They should do it right away and say, hey, you owe me money.
Right.
Once he sues them, right. Once the case has been officially opened, then it doesn't help them to admit. Just like a thief. Once the case has been opened against the thief, he can't admit anymore.
Once it's been opened.
Right, open. Right. The case here is that Chaim didn't sue back. He didn't tell the court, hey, wait a second, I want him to pay me now. Yeah. He could have done it that second. He didn't. He's first celebrating with his family. Oh, wow, I'm free. Okay.
So the principle you gave earlier, once testimony is given,
you can't renege on it, right. Kivan shehigid, shuv eino chozer umagid. Once you said one way, you can no longer come back and say the other way. Now that we finished the quote of the Braisa, the Gemara is going to analyze what we just read. Ein nasin ben gusha uven chalutza kedamaran. That's like we explained in the Mishnah, or we explained in the Gemara about the Mishnah. Ve'en golin nare miklat kedamaran. We quoted verses to support that, why they would not be exiled to a city of refuge. Ve'en mishalmin et hakofer. They do not pay that money that's called kofar to redeem themselves. Kasavre, that's because the rabbis of the Braisa held kufra kapara, that money is really being paid to gain atonement for one's acts having killed someone. Vehane, and these witnesses, lavne kaparaninu, they aren't entitled to forgiveness. Just like we saw earlier about exile. It's not a tax. It's really a privilege to gain atonement. One's ox murdered, so he can gain atonement by, so to speak, paying off his sin. That's something unusual. Part of the idea is that he didn't do it, his ox did it, whatever. It's a long story. Okay. Yeah.
Mean that because the witnesses didn't kill, they don't need to do kapara for
that. No, it says lav bnei kapara nino. They're not worthy. They have no rights to that atonement. Bnei kapara is like bar mitzvah, having the capacity to attain. Okay, once we opened this concept, so the Gemara now wants to explore this idea of whether kofar money is for atonement or not. Mantana kufra kapara. The Gemara says, which Tana, who is of that opinion? If we're going to say that our Braisa is that opinion, so maybe we'll be able to identify who the author of the Braisa is. Why do we care who the author of the Braisa is? The answer is that different Tanoim have different halachic weights. When we try to identify, when we say man tane, who is the author of this Mishnah or this Braisa, what we're trying to do is define the halachic weight of that quote. If I know it's a far out opinion, so it's going to have less weight. If I know it's like Rabbi Akiva, it's going to be a high profile, a rabbi that has a tremendous halachic weight, so then the Braisa has more weight. So when we try to identify, that's what we're doing. What I'm telling you now is the Ramban at the end of the first perek of Erevin. That's how the Ramban defines Mantani.
Okay. What's the purpose?
Now we know. There's more, but that's what's relevant to us now. As we learn more, we're going to redefine the importance of Mantana. We gave one angle. Rashi in the beginning of Megillah gives another angle. Rashi in Brachos gives a third angle. What we're doing now is taking one aspect, which is the classical aspect. Mantana gives us halachic way. We will expand the concept as we continue. Amar Rav Chisna, so Rav Chisna tells us who is the author of the Braisa. Rabbi Ishmael, bno shel Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. It's Rabbi Ishmael, the son of Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. And now he will quote us the source that he claims is supporting that. It's not so simple. We're not really... Okay, so let's introduce the Braisa, and then next week pick up here. The Torah says that when one's ox killed, so if it did it a third time, so the owner should have been more careful. Ordinarily, oxen don't kill. There are countries where the oxen walk on the street with the people, and that was commonplace. It wasn't common that an ox got annoyed and killed someone. But if there's an ox that did it, so then the owner should have been on top of it. Now, the Torah says that the owner should pay kofar. The owner should, the Torah words it as, v'natan pidyon nafsho. He will give the redemption of his soul. And the question is, how do you redeem your soul? So Chazal had a tradition that it means we evaluate the value of one's life monetarily. How do you do that? You can't put a sticker on life. Right. But nonetheless, what the Torah meant was, you go to the slave market and you evaluate from a physical perspective. If I took this person and sold him as a slave, how much money would I get for him? That's what we obligate the person. The person. Now, the question is, who am I evaluating? Am I evaluating the person who was bored to death and I'm saying, let me pay off his life? Or am I evaluating myself? I'm saying, my life is on the line. I'm responsible for what my ox did. The Torah says, I don't have to pay for it with my own life. I have to redeem my life. So I will go and evaluate myself on the slave market. That's a machlokas in the Braisa. And coming off of that machlokas, the Gemara is going to suggest that if I evaluate... Okay, we'll see how the Gemara wants to connect that to our sugiya, whether kofar money is kapara, is there for an atonement. That's where we'll pick up is Hashem on Sunday.